You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to episode number 45 of the Fabulous Peltoncast. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we are coming to you live from Brent, Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48 champion, Seattle Seahawks.
And we need to get to our beer of the week quickly here, because there is a special toast in order.
There is.
So I'm gonna say quickly what we're going to be drinking, and then we'll get to the toast. Okay?
Okay.
All right. So what we have here today is from Black Raven Brewing Company, Spring Beak Key Lime IPA, brewed in partnership with their good friends at Bartell Drugs.
Oh, there you go.
The now pretty hip Bartell Drugs. And here's what Black Raven has to say about this beer. We are proud to offer Spring Beak IPA as a limited single release beer brewed in the style of an IPA, but with the addition of vanilla bean, true cinnamon, and lime zest.
I don't want fake cinnamon.
Yeah. Good thing it's true cinnamon. But what are we toasting here to today?
First off, I told you I had a story about this beer. So earlier today...
What?
Earlier today, our mom came over to see some photos that we'll get to later. And she, for some reason, she's just scrolling through the internet and for some reason mentions, hey, there's this new beer. Is it something you might be interested in? And it turns out it's this beer.
This beer. What did
and
you
I
say?
And I told her, nah, I'm not interested in that. I didn't think Key
I love that she's like, there's a new beer, and it's only at Bartell Drugs.
I don't know where she came across this information.
At Bartell Drugs, that's the only place it is.
No, she was like scrolling through the internet, so maybe Bartell emailed
talking
her or something.
To you
I don't know.
Okay, but, this is just like that sketch from SNL.
What?
Right? Well, you know, she's looking for the Zagat guide.
Oh, yeah.
Chris Bart, there's a new beer.
Mom definitely is like that a lot of the time. They say it's great.
Okay. I don't know how she possibly found this beer on the internet and brought it up to you. And then I'm talking to you and I'm saying I have Black Raven Spring Beak and you're out on this.
Key lime did not sound like a good beer flavor to me.
Would lime seem like a good... what's the difference between lime and key lime? Just where the limes come from?
Well, key lime is like sweeter, right? Isn't that the thing?
Or is there no just... idea.
Use more sugar with it.
I chose this. I was at Bartell Drugs, naturally, which is where I get most of my beer from. And I chose this over the Fremont Brewing Company Emerald City Comic-Con beer.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
So I seemed in on the Spring Beak.
I guess I just don't like key lime pie, and that's probably the issue here.
I think I'm good on key lime pie.
Like, it is good?
I think it's good.
Because I'm good on usually means you don't want to.
Okay, but what are we toasting to?
A toast here to loyal listener Ben B.
Oh.
Who welcomed a pair of twins into the world over the weekend.
Congrats.
And now we'll be taking all his parenting advice from you in this podcast.
Mm.
In soon, his children will surely be naming obscure colleges and what the scores are.
I don't really know. I feel like this came more from you than it did from me.
What did? Oh, that.
From Baby Fantasy Genius. Now there's three children, so I can't even really call him that.
It's babyist. Babier. And
you mean baby.
Babier and babyist.
Babyist,
yes,
yeah. So Baby Fantasy Genius.
Yeah.
His interest in fringe college basketball compares to no one.
It
right?
really...
Except for you.
It's exceptional. I'm not even that interested in Mercer.
But his interest
like, it's
in
like all the
fringe sports.
All the conference tournaments that you're seeing on ESPN right now, before the major conference tournaments actually get underway, mm-hmm. with the exception of the West Coast Conference, which is a pretty big deal, that's what he's into.
Yes. I find out most of my info about college sports from him. I'm like, what time is this game on? I'm like, what time does Tennessee play Kentucky or whatever? And he's like, yeah, that's at 1:30.
Even though he's just not interested in that one. He wants...
Okay. No, those teams are like fringe enough.
Tennessee and Kentucky?
All right. No, that's not fringe enough.
It's getting your
he's
first
gonna
off,
need
you're
Bethune
need
some, Cookman to be
you're
involved.
You're going to need some directions in there. You're going to need multiple
Western
adjectives.
Western Kentucky? What do you think about this beer?
Oh, I haven't tried it yet.
Okay.
Even though we said
so toast. The thing is about babies that everybody on Seahawks Twitter has two or three of them.
I feel left out.
Have you noticed honestly. This?
Only after people started tweeting about it.
They all were like, hey, congrats, I have multiple children also. They were just naming the quantity of children that they had.
Did you jump in?
Yeah. Congrats, three children. But it's amazing in Seahawks Twitter how many people have children, right? Because I'm in the music world where almost nobody has children.
Yeah, it's a little bit different world.
I am like not a pariah per se, but definitely an outlier. But then you get to Seahawks Twitter.
You're right in the center there.
Everybody has at least two or three children.
You're only an outlier for your opinions about George Fant, but we'll get to that later.
What are my opinions about George Fant? Pro?
Yeah.
My feelings are just that he shouldn't be. That no, I, it's we'll, not. We'll it's not that later. It's a prediction.
We'll get to that later.
Okay. Okay. But so you are just recently back from Boston.
Yes, I spent the weekend and part of last week in Boston for the annual Sloan Sports Analytics Conference. Have my 9th consecutive year attending that. But I would say that the most important part of the weekend, was an interaction that related to the Pelton cast.
What is that?
I don't know. Well, I do know. I don't know if you, the listener.
That would be great radio.
I don't know if you, the listener, happened to catch last week's Bill Barnwell podcast, recapping the Bachelor episode and answering some reader questions. One of those they got into was about the NFL. It was about Adrian Peterson's future destination, which we talked about on a past Pelton cast. And Bill Barnwell was listening, and he had some thoughts.
Are you playing live audio?
I'm splicing it in here.
Wow, live audio! Always my favorite.
Berated for this discussion on the fabulous Pelton cast with a friend of the show, Kevin Pelton, and Tristan Caracino, which they're on notice for being so cruel. But I
do you feel like you're on notice right now?
Do I feel like I'm on notice? I guess maybe a little bit on notice.
The thing I texted you after this was, does this mean I have to fight Barnwell this weekend? And then, funny enough, so I ran into him on Thursday night, the day before the night before the conference.
In a dark alley, I'm assuming.
What initially began is entirely a gathering of like basketball stats geeks at this bar opposite the Garden, organized by the Celtics analytics guy. And now has grown that like there's people from various different sports there. It takes over the entire top room of the bar. And so Barnwell comes up to me and he says, like, are we going to have to fight now?
So you both agree that you have to fight.
But it turns out we didn't.
Oh, you didn't have to fight.
We did not have to fight.
You both think that it has to turn into instead, a bare knuckles brawl.
Instead, we just went to dinner at Fogo de Chao a couple nights later. That was the only resolution to this. But we did agree that it's a good idea to just, like, keep up the feud here.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
and specifically centered on you, with me, like, being caught in the middle between
the two of you
and my brother.
I feel like I need to, like, save the Barnwell hot takes for the Seahawks section that we're going to talk about. But I really like, I'm like, you know what? Let's just put the feud behind us. You know, let's let it go. Nothing really that bad has been said yet. We don't need to escalate. And you're like, let's take it up a level.
Full steam ahead.
You're like, ooh, bring it on, Barnwell.
At no point did
I say, come and see me in the ring.
These Barnwell takes are getting 20% hotter. That's what I said.
I like to imagine you're like, first Barnwell, we're coming for other podcasts next.
Even though Mina Kimes seems to be in with us on this one. You hear her laughing at the end of that clip. Earlier Thursday.
Okay.
Another annual tradition is playing pickup basketball at MIT. And again, it's organized by this company, Catapult, that tracks player data. Like, they track players in practice. The Huskies, I think, are one of the many college and NBA teams that use them. So we wear the same trackers as the players and then run around and play pickup basketball. And then they tell us how embarrassingly poor our, like, athleticism is compared to NBA players. But what made this different this year is the AP decided to send a writer out to this game, as well as a photographer. And so now there is a photo gallery on newspaper websites throughout the country that features a photo of me stretching.
Okay, so how did you fare in this game? Because my favorite thing to hear about Sloan is how you fared in this pickup basketball game. And typically, you're one of the best hustlers, right?
Yeah, you know, I think looking at, they never sent us the full results, but looking at it on the computer they had there, pretty generally like about third in the player load, which is kind of a measure of, you know, how much distance you travel and then like contact that
you do.
Created.
You do a lot of running and a lot of hitting into people.
Yeah, boxing out.
A lot of
yeah.
contact.
So I felt good about those results. I've done maybe a little better in the past, but I hadn't played much basketball in a long period of time now. Okay. So I felt comfortable with that. And my team generally won. So that's the nice thing.
What were your stats in these games? Did you score a point?
I did score a couple points.
Really?
I don't think on
putbacks? Or are you being fed the ball in the post?
Putbacks and then, yeah, being left open down low and scoring off of that kind of feed. Our team had really good ball movement on Thursday. There was, like, some plays where, like, we swung the ball around the perimeter, had, like, three or four passes in a row and got a layup out of it.
Nice.
It was actually quite impressive. Then on Sunday, I think I went, like, 1-3 in the games we played on Sunday and scored one basket the entire time. It was not as good.
You're coming up with big rebounds, though? Defensive stops?
Often. On Sunday, one of the games we played...
often?
Well, not often. Not. But I would say not always, because in the game we played on Sunday, like at various times, there's a 6'9 guy who works for an NBA
God.
Company, Second Spectrum, that also works with tracking data, but in-game. And he played at MIT.
MIT has a basketball team.
They do, yeah. Yeah, so it's very difficult. Like, I'm coming in to get an offensive rebound, and then there's a 6'9 guy who just jumps over me. It's like, what am I doing here? What's the point?
Yeah, everything that you do is negated by one tall person.
It really is. It's so much.
Who would be, and I think a lot of people want to know this. I see this question in your chats a lot, which, RIP. We should have toasted that also. But who would be your NBA comparable?
So I've often gone with, and this came up, like someone else brought this up during the game.
I know who you're going to say.
Reggie Evans.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Nick Collison.
No, I've never said Nick Collison. He's much too skilled for me.
Okay.
It's like if you took Reggie Evans, but subtracted a foot of height.
Uh-huh.
And not as dirty, I would say, generally speaking. I've also used Ryan Bowen in the past. Yeah.
Okay.
Journeyman for the Nuggets many years ago.
And you
used to be a thorn in the Sonic side, Ryan Bowen.
Ryan Bowen, you felt like you played to that ability. I'm impressed that you scored points, because in the past, haven't you gone multiple games without scoring?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, in that one, I started off hot and scored like a couple times in the first game, and then it was kind of all downhill from there. But it still established that nice little baseline.
It's funny how different our games are when we play basketball. We should talk about this at some point in more detail in the future. But I am a gunner completely.
Never go inside the paint.
Right?
I'm like somehow the physical presence of the two of us, even though I'm like a half inch taller.
I consider you to be a giant compared to me. But not just not going inside the paint, but like I get the ball and I'm trying to shoot.
Yes.
It's a last resort. To shoot. Yeah, it's a last resort. It's like me honking a horn. Or sorry, any Seattle driver honking.
It's like using an umbrella.
Did you have any other takeaways from the conference?
You know, it's pretty much become routine at this point. So, not really.
What about anything else that you did around the conference?
I went to the Celtics game on Wednesday night.
Oh, really?
Went a day early specifically so I could see the Celtics. They went out of town over the weekend, but on Wednesday night they hosted the Cleveland Cavaliers on ESPN. And so... was a lot of fun to be at that game matchup of the top two teams in the Eastern Conference. And let me tell you one thing about the people of Boston. It's just kind of nice to be around people who love Isaiah Thomas as much as I do.
Yes.
Like the MVP chants, like they love Isaiah Thomas.
Oh, man.
And he didn't do a lot of scoring in that game in the fourth quarter, although he came up with probably the biggest basket. But a couple of times late, drives, draws defensive attention from LeBron James, kicks out to teammates for open threes, and the Celtics came away with the victory.
Cue the MVP chance.
Absolutely.
So he hit basically the game-winning three in this game.
I think so. I mean, I think it was a tie game at that point. I can't remember exactly what the situation was.
Man, I'm impressed, though, that you got to go to Boston and see Isaiah hit a game-winning three against the defending world champion Cleveland Cavaliers.
Yeah, it was a fun game to attend, and then it came down to, it looked like Deron Williams had a wide open three that would have given Cleveland the lead and couldn't knock that down, and that ended up securing the victory for Boston.
Anything else from Sloan?
I think that's mostly it.
What about Boston in general, though?
Oh, well, yes, one other important aspect of my trip. On Sunday, this is something we've mentioned, I think, obliquely on the podcast, but maybe not gone into. I have a lifelong goal of eating at all 64 burrito places in the 538 burrito bracket, which we discussed briefly with Nate Silver on Saturday night.
Wait, did you really?
Yeah.
My favorite thing about you going to Sloan is you name-dropping Nate Silver.
Yeah, exactly.
Wait, so what? First, bring up what happened with this conversation with Nate Silver. What did he have to say about that?
We were just discussing the two top finishers, not top finishers, actually. The two top burrito places generally considered in San Francisco, La Taqueria, which won the competition, and El Farolito, which was eliminated in the first round. And I was the only person at the table who'd been to both of them that preferred La Taqueria.
Really?
Yeah. Even Nate Silver.
Wait, the one that won?
Nate Silver wasn't the only voter or the deciding voter.
Really?
Yeah. So his favorite was actually the one that didn't win.
Did you mention to Nate Silver that you were planning on visiting all 64?
I didn't think to say it, which is funny. I wasn't thinking about it. And then by the next morning, I had realized I had the opportunity to go visit another spot. I had already been to one of there's two burrito places in Boston that were part of the bracket.
I just don't think of burritos when I think of Boston.
You don't, naturally. But it's a big enough city. You have a variety of different options. So I had been to Anna's Taqueria several years ago, even before the bracket came out.
Wow, it was, pre-bracket.
It was it and Rancho Bravo were the two I had been
Rancho
to.
Rancho Bravo. Okay.
That's how the word is pronounced. Those were the two I had been to before the bracket actually came out. Rancho Bravo being here in Seattle, of course. And the other one was El Pelon Taqueria.
Okay.
And so after we played pickup basketball on Sunday, went over there for lunch and had their El Gordo burrito, which was made with steak. And what was really interesting about this, plantains.
Really?
In there. Yeah, that had a really delicious flavor to this. So I have recalibrated my all-time, my running list,
okay,
let's say, of burrito brackets. So I've now been to 10 of the 64 places.
Nice. That's an even number.
And I looked at it. I think about half of them are pretty readily achievable, like either could be, you know, something I would do as an NBA trip or like in a big city, something like that. The other half are going to be probably going to have to like specifically try to go there. Anyway, La Taqueria.
Many of these places will close before you go to
them. I'm worried about that. El Farolito are at the top. Taqueria Cancun, which is also in San Francisco in the Mission District, along with those two. That's in number three. And then El Pelon Taqueria slotted in at number four after.
Number four. Not bad. So that was the fourth best burrito you've ever had?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Look at you, Boston.
Yeah, not bad. I mean, Anna's Taqueria is actually number five behind it. So I had both of them ahead of the two places in Orange County I've been to, as well as a couple other spots.
I think I saw that Bill Barnwell went to Anna's Taqueria.
Yes, he went there on
Sunday. How dare he?
No, then I DM'd him afterwards, and he said that he thought that El Pelon was better. But
you're like, bring it on, Barnwell. El Pelon is better.
Anna's Taqueria has like more locations there, so it was more his memory of living in Boston. So there's your burrito update, and now we should talk about more food.
Okay, so we have, it's all food. So last week we recorded the Pelton Cast on Sunday night last week, right?
We did.
And then little did we know that the next day the Ringer would unleash upon the world a ranking of the top 50 fast food items. What I would call a divisive list.
I mean, any fast food list is going to inevitably be divisive.
But this really, it enthralled the internet for an entire week.
It inflamed the passions of the internet. I went to dinner with Barnwell and a group that also...
With Barnwell?
I know. With the enemy. As I mentioned earlier, I went to dinner with him and a group that also included Nate Duncan.
I'm assuming you discussed what it would look like with Adrian Peterson as the Seahawks primary ball carrier most of the time.
Yeah, that didn't come up. And Nate Duncan of the Dunked On podcast, Seth Partnow of Nylon Calculus, among others. And About an hour of that dinner was spent discussing the fast food list. And about a half hour of that was spent discussing what we should discuss right now, which is how do you define fast food?
Now, okay, okay. So first off, we're going to be giving our top five fast food items right now.
Of course, yes.
And I'm going to be pushing the boundaries of what you consider a fast food item.
Certainly of what I consider a fast food
item. Your perspective is very small.
It's rigid.
It's rigid.
I think it has to...
You're nothing if not disciplined in your perspective of fast food items.
It has to be a style of restaurant that you would typically expect to have a drive-through. It does not necessarily have to have a drive-through itself. So, like, Shake Shack does not have a drive-through. But because of the fact that a place that serves burgers and fries and shakes typically would have a drive-through.
Okay, so yeah, that was my question for you, because there are a lot of burger places that don't have drive-throughs. But basically, any burger is considered fast food.
So it can't be like a burger on, you know, the Mets menu. Like, that doesn't qualify. But if their primary object is serving burgers and fries, then yes. And even if you have a drive-through, but you're a place that generally doesn't, like a class of food that generally doesn't. So nothing from Starbucks qualifies. Not that that was
nothing from Starbucks qualifies. I mean, first off, nothing from Starbucks would qualify. Like, it would qualify, but it would never make any lists.
Yes.
But
there are like various Chipotle locations that have drive-throughs.
You are gonna hate my list.
Wow. Wow.
Oh my God. I feel like we should get through the list first and then you should try to pick it apart, because you are going to hate at least three of the five items.
Chipotle is fast casual. It's not fast food. That's a different thing. They're different categories. Words have meanings.
Words have meanings. I mean, there is a new, what I consider restaurants to be like new fast food, basically, right? There's restaurants like Mod Pizza, which is huge in Seattle. Which is still fast food, but it's like new fast food.
It's not fast food.
Do you consider pizza places fast food?
No.
You basically only consider burgers fast food then. That's it. All you're doing is talking about burgers. You're not talking about fast food.
I mean, there are chicken-related places that also qualify.
Just burgers and chicken?
Yeah, pretty much.
Your definition is way too rigid. Do desserts count?
If they're on the menu at those locations,
it has to be at those. This is ridiculous.
I mean, otherwise,
but
does Molly Moon's fast food?
I don't know, maybe.
No.
Oh my God.
Fast food has a meaning.
This is fast food. Does it take you a long time to get Chipotle?
It's different.
What about Jimmy John's? Where do you stand on sandwich? No.
Like, obviously not.
Taken aback.
These are different categories.
But that's every single thing.
Judgment on them. They're just not fast food.
Wow.
All right. Well, I guess
I just can't even wait till you hear what my number five is, because my number five is like even like it's pushing the boundaries of even what I consider fast food. But it needs to be included.
That's fascinating. I mean, I don't know if there's going to be. I think there will probably be one point of overlap between our two lists.
My number one, I'm assuming, is going to be the same as your number one.
All right. Are we starting at the bottom or the top?
Oh, we got to start at number five.
All right. In number five, I have McDonald's fries, which are the best of all fast food fries. I like Wendy's, the sea salt fries. They do a good job with them. But McDonald's, just the sheer amount of salt that they put on their fries, the crispiness, they're the best fast food fries.
I like McDonald's fries. I'm personally a Jack in the Box fry person.
Interesting. I'm not a fan.
If I had to rank, it's hard because fries are just good. Fries come in at number one. No, fries are not on my list. That's the thing, obviously. There was a lot of debate. They're Did you listen to the Bill Simmons Joe House podcast?
I have not yet listened to that. I think it came out right before I went on this trip, so I'm behind on my podcast listening.
And they had a conversation, which was there's Auntie Anne's pretzels, which you obviously don't consider fast food.
No.
Because you only consider burgers and chicken sandwiches fast food.
I mean, they're closer because...
You think it should be a list of like eight items, because that's all you could possibly get to with your rigid definition of what is fast food.
Oh, there's so many good items I had to leave out. That's wrong. Wetzel's Pretzels, I am assuming, do have drive-thrus, so maybe there's a
case. Auntie Anne's doesn't count, but Wetzel's Pretzels is okay?
No, because of that, that might be an argument for Auntie Anne's.
Okay. But on the Ringer list, Auntie Anne's was ahead of the Shack Burger from Shake Shack. And it's like, okay, if I had to choose between a Shack Burger and an Auntie Anne's pretzel, I'm choosing the Shack Burger 100% of the time.
That's very true.
It's the same way that I feel about most fries, right? Like, burgers are ahead of fries. Fries are an accompanying item. And this is the same argument that Joe House made, basically.
It's a valid argument. I can't disagree with it. I maybe should have gone with something else here, but...
Joe House, a great podcaster, a person I would never feud with.
All right, what's your number five that is...
At number five...
Pushing the boundaries.
You're going to hate
decency
this.
Decency and decorum.
A quarter pound all-beef hot dog plus a soda for $1.50 from Costco.
No, actually, I think that's acceptable.
That's acceptable?
Because
you would never go to a Costco drive-thru.
No, but hot dogs, generally speaking, like the class of food,
this works. Your definition of this is ridiculous.
And that's actually a phenomenal choice. I wish I would have thought of it.
Oh, man. I'm telling you, I thought long and hard, and I thought outside the box.
You did, clearly. Although my honest position is I haven't had a Costco hot dog in like a couple of years here. That's the weird thing, what? By the way, about this entire conversation. Like, I almost never eat.
You haven't had a Costco hot dog in a couple of years?
Yeah.
$1.50 for the hot dog.
I'm aware
and the drink,
of the value.
The greatest deal in fast food. It's, cannot be beaten.
It's true. I'm aware. I no dispute.
I've had probably, I think calendar year 2016, I probably had 40 Costco hot dogs.
You also have small children who really love Costco hot dogs.
It's usually me driving that, though. Okay, what do you have at number four?
Number four, I have Wendy's Vanilla Frosty. What I love about the Frosty is, number one, it's basically just ice cream.
It is just ice cream.
They branded it as something else. And number two, my favorite part of the Frosty, the fact that you can get it is your drink. It's just ice cream. And I'm like, oh, hey, what would you like to drink? I would like ice cream. And shake is kind of like that.
Yes.
But Frosty is not even like making any, there's not even like any attempt to conceal what you're doing here. You're just eating ice cream. But it's great because I don't drink pop and I just want a water instead. And I will have that Frosty as my drink. Thank you very much, Wendy's.
I should have had Diet Coke be my number one.
That's actually pretty bold. I like that.
Just Diet Coke. No, they actually mentioned this. I think Joe House and Bill Simmons mentioned that.
Some Diet Coke tastes better
certain
than
place, I mean, like McDonald's Diet Coke, bar none. Amazing.
Also, what about the Taco Time and the drink machines?
The remix machines?
Yeah.
I
associate them with Taco Time because they were the first place here that had them.
Pagliacci, I think, might have. But I'm not as committed to Taco Time crushed ice as other people are.
Oh, I'm in on Taco Time crushed ice. I'm not. Some people would die for Taco Time crushed ice. So
would die.
None of us are as committed to Taco Time crushed ice as they are. But
I don't think people would actually die for Taco.
That was
okay.
An exaggeration.
At number four, I have. You've already told me this is not a fast food item, and that is the Chipotle burrito.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's not a fast food item. It's fast casual.
Chipotle, yes.
And it's overrated anyway.
It's overrated? This is pretty much the greatest item that you're finding in fast food. It's gourmet food masquerading as fast food.
That's why it's not fast. Part of why it's not fast food. But
the thing about a Chipotle burrito is that it's different every single time you get one, right? They're using real ingredients.
You're saying it's like a box of chocolates?
I mean, the corn might be from a completely different place than it was from the previous time. Everything about a Chipotle burrito is different each individual time you get one, and it's amazing every single time.
You and Nate Duncan have a podcast talking about how much you love Chipotle, and
and every single other person in the entire world could have a podcast talking about how much we love Chipotle. Chipotle tacos on the Ringer list ahead of a Chipotle burrito. What are you talking about?
Okay, yeah, that is kind of nonsensical. Like, no one goes to Chipotle for the tacos.
You just get the tacos if you're sick of having the burrito because you've had three burritos this week.
I can't imagine being sick of having burritos.
Yeah. I have various jobs that I think that I would be really good at. Have I talked to you about this?
No.
But I think that I would be, they call it, you know, Subway, they call them sandwich artists.
That's true.
I always have thought that I could be a really good Subway sandwich artist, but at some point I stopped going to Subway, right? I realized that ingredients are garbage at Subway, right? But I think that I could be... Subway's not going to be one of my top three. I think that I could be an excellent Chipotle burrito artist because I care.
Because you compete.
I would compete my hardest at every single burrito. What's your number three?
All right, in number three, I have the Taco Time Chicken Natural Soft Taco.
Chicken natural soft taco?
Yeah, that's become my go-to. I mean, for a long time, it was the crisp beef burrito, and I caped hard for the crisp beef burrito. It's a little harder to digest as I've gotten older. Need something a little lighter. And the chicken natural soft taco.
You're just not competing at digestion. I digest. I've gotten older and nothing about my digestion has changed.
Okay. Sorry.
Anyway, compete harder. Go on.
The fact that there are some people that think Taco Bell is superior to Taco Time and CX Twitter, like that's appalling. That's offensive. If you want to make the argument is that Taco Time actually probably deserves to be considered in the fast casual category.
But that's because, only to you.
But because of the fact
that you would make that argument to yourself that it doesn't apply.
I'm not the only one who holds these opinions.
Yeah, you definitely are. Who would not consider every single Taco Time has, maybe not every single Taco Time. Not all Taco Times. But most Taco Times have a drive-through.
Yes.
Which makes it inherently fast food.
Yes. That's why I included them on the list. I would say if Taco Times brought back the sweet potato Mexi fries, which, by the way, Mexi fries, another great thing, because they just rebranded Tater Tots and called them Mexi fries. And that's a phenomenal marketing.
Yeah, Mexi fries are amazing.
And they taste so much better than Tater Tots.
I don't know about that. I think they taste equally as good.
That actually probably would have been my Taco Time representative, but I had to have something from Taco Time on this list.
Taco Time's great.
Yeah.
I mean, Taco Time is...
Like, I understand, obviously, why it's not on the Ringer list, especially because most of the country that does have Taco Time has fake Taco Time. Compared
we're
to...
We're talking Taco Time Northwest.
Yes, which is different.
And also, the one representative at the Ringer from Seattle, being Danny Kelly, apparently hates Taco Time. I just really didn't even know that people hated Taco Time.
Yeah, you said that you didn't know that there was an opinion that could exist.
Yeah, something. I didn't know there was a take.
Was take. Yeah,
my mind was open to a new take this last week when I learned that people disliked Taco Time.
I mean, I have a thought about Taco Time versus Taco Bell, but I'm actually going to save that thought for later.
Wow, later in this podcast?
Yes.
Okay.
Because it relates to something else we're going to discuss.
Man, I can't wait. I have no idea what that thing is, but I'm excited for it.
Okay.
I hope it's the first Sounders match.
It's Husky Women's Basketball.
What are we on, number three?
Yeah.
Number three, probably the fast food item that I've maybe eaten the most of. And this is the one that you would consider a true fast food item. And that is the McDonald's sausage burrito.
Interesting.
I'm one of the biggest proponents of the sausage burrito. I mean, breakfast burrito.
How would you know?
I've talked to people. I mean, I just learned that hating Taco Time was a take. Maybe I'll learn that there's a community of people out there who dislike the McDonald's sausage burrito, but I have not met them yet.
You conducted a survey outside of Key Arena.
Yeah. It's like a lot of people are into the Egg McMuffin.
Yes.
Egg McMuffin is a fine sandwich, right?
You know, I think my favorite breakfast item, sausage biscuit.
Sausage biscuit is fine.
Yeah.
I personally don't eat sausage, but I eat McDonald's sausage burritos. My body doesn't handle sausage well, but it handles these well because they're amazing. There's something about...
Because you're just competing that hard.
There's something about the melted cheese throughout a McDonald's sausage burrito, which is the perfect taste. You get it with a hot sauce packet. It is excellent.
I can't tell you when the last time was I had a McDonald's breakfast burrito, but it was as a child.
Yeah,
sure.
That's the other thing, it definitely reminds me of childhood. Okay, oh, yeah. I have a weird theory.
The cheese in them, there's like a very specific taste of the cheese in a McDonald's burrito. And I feel like there was one like fancy, like we went to like a real sit-down restaurant and had breakfast burritos, and somehow they tasted like...
That's always what you want. You want to pay McDonald's like $10 to a fancy restaurant just to get the flavor of a dollar McDonald's breakfast
burrito. Well, it's like me having the Le Pig Mac at Kashan Butcher. Yeah. The fact that they could replicate the taste of a Big Mac.
Wow.
But then also have like high quality meat.
Then you could feel pretentious about it.
That was the perfect combo.
So I have a theory. Right?
Although, you know, by the way, I learned a depressing fact. I missed out on, there's a burrito bracket burrito in New Orleans that I completely missed out on.
Wow.
Retroactively unhappy about it.
Clearly not competing hard enough. Okay. So I take a number of vitamins every single morning. Right? And I have a theory that it makes me like McDonald's breakfast more. I don't go there very often, but when I do, I'm with the large Diet Coke that I get at like 9 a.m. alongside my two sausage burritos, right?
Really should be your number one.
With those, I'm taking all of my vitamins all at once. And I think the like rush that I get from all of these vitamins makes me like the food that I'm getting more.
Okay.
So, I mean, it might be the same with all these. Well, actually, it's only that. That's the only one that I take. I don't go to Costco and take all my vitamins. 9 a.m. quarter pound all beef hot dog. Anyway, that's just a little theory.
I've seen people order at 9:30. We've talked about this.
Okay, what do you have at number two?
McDonald's McNuggets.
Oh, the McNugget?
Like, old reliable right there. It always comes through. Always delivers.
The best chicken nuggets. I've never had Chick-fil-A chicken nuggets, which I didn't even know actually existed.
I had them. Wasn't a huge fan of them.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I think Chick-fil-A's chicken sandwich is terrific. It maybe merited consideration for this list, although I just probably haven't had it enough to really consider it.
I mean, we only have one Chick-fil-A in the Northwest. Like, we haven't grown
and
up
And I've never
Chick-fil-A.
Been to that particular... Well, we only have one Chick-fil-A in the general Seattle area. The Northwest, there are more of them.
Okay, the Northwest is a big place.
Yes.
There are probably numerous Chick-fil-A's in Boise. Chick-fil-A fared very well on the Ringer list.
I mean, I think it fares well in life. In the world.
Okay.
It's quite popular.
Okay, Chick-fil-A's great.
I don't know if you're aware of that.
I've always been happy that we have a Popeyes in Renton.
Yes.
It's one of the better things about living in Renton. Okay, number two. You've already told me that you don't consider... You said unquestionably you do not consider this a fast food item because you are wrong.
It's not.
And that is the greatest treat that you could have in the summertime. On a hot summer day, you go and get yourself a Slurpee, you turn on California Love, and you drive around in Boulevard Park. That is what summer is.
I will say, in the conversation we had at dinner, I think Nate Duncan's definition was it had to either be a drive-through or a gas station.
Boom! So 7-Eleven's gas station.
Would count in that scenario. Can I give you a hot take?
What is a hot take?
I don't think I will ever in my life have a Slurpee again.
What? You're done with Slurpees forever. Yep. I'm coming at you. I'm saying it's 95 degrees. You're sitting in your house in Boulevard Park. I'm like, hey, I'm coming over. I'm going to be bringing a Slurpee. I've got Dr. Dre on the radio. Do you want to drink this?
All right. Well, you know, if you offer me a free Slurpee, I'm not going to turn it down.
It's the cost of the Slurpee that's the issue.
I'm not going to go out of my way to get a Slurpee at this point.
What is wrong with you?
It's just it's a lot of sugar. I don't know when I became this old man either.
Wow. This list is not a list of the top five fast food restaurants. It's a list of how disappointed I am in you.
I mean, 10 years ago, if we would have done this list, and if I considered it qualified,
you
which
said
I don't.
Unquestionably no. Everybody else said yes.
Look, it's not my fault other people have lax standards.
Wow. I can't even believe you. You're saying, I'm overwhelmed. But for some reason, every single thing that I think about is Slurpee, even though I've drank numerous of them in the modern time.
Hey, Tristan, I'm feeling like fast food today. Like, I'm in the mood for fast food. You're going to offer a Slurpee? That's going to be your response to that?
I have a broad spectrum.
If you were like,
an icy treat from a fast food place, I'd be like, what about a Slurpee?
And you'd be like, Blizzard, because that's
no,
or
God,
Frosty.
Blizzards are terrible.
Blizzards are terrible?
Okay, blizzards aren't terrible. I'm lashing out. I'm lashing out because you've talked bad about the Slurpee.
I mean, like, your opinion is perfectly valid. I'm not there. I'm not in that headspace.
I'm shocked about this. Okay.
This has proven is contentious, as expected.
need to...
In the number one spot for me.
I'm hoping that we have the same thing.
I think we might. The In-N-Out Double-Double Animal Style.
Yes! There it is.
The consensus number one fast food item. It was stunning to me that they went with the non-animal style double-double.
Get the hell out of here with that. You don't. I've literally never had a double-double that is not animal style.
So the first time I went to In-N-Out, like this was in 2005. I was a naive child back then.
You used to think that Slurpees counted as fast food.
No, I had no position. I'm sure I held this position at the time. I just liked Slurpees then.
Like Slurpees?
I didn't know to order it animal style. So I got I walked the 2 miles from my hotel to the In-N-Out in Las Vegas.
Oh, yeah. People haven't heard about this at all also. But you staying in places that are like
Well, I was staying at the Palms because the Sonics were staying there during Summer League.
But and you staying at places that are so hot that you might die while walking around in them, and then choosing to walk like multiple mile-long walks just to get fast food.
Only at night, but yes. Yeah, I also walked to In-N-Out in...
Maybe just
was,
In-N-Out.
That was Tempe, and that was several miles in the summer. It was at night, but it was still much too hot. And I definitely managed to get... saved just enough battery in my phone to get and take a... to call a cab for the ride back. I think that was before Uber was really a thing, or Lyft now.
I like that you're holding your hand in front of you still.
I'm looking at my phone. But none of this existed in 2005, so I just walked the way there. Anyways, I was like, what's the big deal with this place? Like, why do people care so much? And it was because I didn't order it animal style, and I did the next time, which I think was in San Francisco in, 2009, and then I was in.
And you were staying in my hotel room when that happened, weren't you?
That is true.
Yeah, you were staying in my hotel room. Tiny hotel room with me and Mrs. Fantasy Genius. We're not eating. You're there eating, and you're a loud eater. It's like a notable moment in our relationship.
Really is. Anyways. Yeah.
But also, the thing that's notable in our relationship is that you didn't offer one to us.
I don't remember exactly what happened. I was sitting at the In-N-Out eating when you guys arrived on your flight, and I was picking you up in a rental car. I will now go to In-N-Out anytime I'm in a city with In-N-Out.
Yes.
That's just the rule.
I mean, when I was in L.A. last summer, maybe this was two summers ago, when I was in L.A., I went out of my way to go to, what is the Hollywood Boulevard or whatever, to go to an insanely packed In-N-Out. I took an Uber ride that was 3 miles or maybe even less. Maybe it was 1.5 miles and took 45 minutes, right? And I sat in a very long line just to have In-N-Out. There are much better restaurants around, but that's all I wanted.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the perfect hamburger.
I mean, the double-double animal style is why they make lists like this.
Just so we can rank it number one again.
Because it's unquestionably fast food, and it is the perfect fast food.
Now, I think an argument that our Seattle listeners may raise, which is most of our listeners, is In-N-Out is overrated.
Who is making this argument?
Lots of people.
What?
And number two, that we're disrespecting Dick's by putting it here. And here is my counter argument, is that I think there are different burgers for different situations.
Okay.
And different food for different situations. So Taco Time, if you're eating a meal, 100% Taco Time. But if it's late at night and you've been drinking a little bit, that's when you're going to want Taco Bell. Same thing with Dick's vis-a-vis In-N-Out.
I think a lot of people consider In-N-Out the same way, though.
I'm sure many people do. But
let's
to
say
me
that you're in a place where you have In-N-Out readily available to you, you might go there only late at night.
True.
Dick's tastes good at all times. I don't question that.
But it tastes best. It's so greasy. It's perfect for that.
Look, we'll get around to reviewing Dick's. And I think it's going to fare quite well in our quest for Seattle's best burger, which
we should mention important. You're apparently unaware of this. Important.
I'm aware, what?
Important Dick's news.
What is that?
They are expanding again.
Really?
You'll recall several years ago, they expanded and had a vote whether it was going to the new location would be in the North End, in the South End, or on the East Side. Mm-hmm. The North End won. There was a new location in Edmonds, and now
Edmonds.
It has been,
I literally do not know where Edmonds is.
Woodway. I only have a very vague sense of it, even though I know people who live there. Now that it's been successful enough, they are expanding again, and now your options are the South End or the East Side, and they will be holding voting online.
I like that they just say South End or East Side. It's like, I need a further description of what that means.
I mean,
the South End and the East Side are big places. Is it going to be in
Kirkland?
They haven't
committed to any one spot. They listed a variety of potential locations in there. So it could be in Renton, if it's the South Side.
I don't think it's going to be in Renton.
It could be Burien. These are possibilities.
It better not be in Burien, because you know my feelings about Burien.
My feelings about Burien are very positive.
Your feelings about Burien are very positive?
I have already cast a vote. Loyal listener Chris Smith has already cast a vote. Obviously, he voted for the
South Side. He lives on the East Side and still voted for the South Side.
Oh, of course. Of course.
If you don't vote for the South Side, it's a shame.
And I'm going to encourage all of our listeners to go and cast their votes. We'll put a link to the... survey on the Pelton Cast website.
Okay, I'm excited about that.
Yeah, you should be.
Which brings us to our weekly quest for Seattle's best burger, and this week we visited
Cali Burger, which conveniently enough is a complete knockoff of In-N-Out, where they literally have duplicated In-N-Out in every way they possibly can.
It's like a Chinese knockoff of In-N-Out. Literally, right?
Is it Chinese in origin?
It's, if not, I had to run and go get my phone because we've decided that from this point forward, we're going to tell the listener which burger place we're going to be previewing the following week. I might just be making a decision here just off the cuff without you even knowing about it.
Oh, yeah. I'm clearly having no say in this whatsoever. But that's nice. So you can eat along with us.
But so that you can eat along with us. But Cali Burger, it's an In-N-Out knockoff. But I have to say, it's pretty great. I mean, In-N-Out is good. And something that's like, let's say 85% of what's In-N-Out is still pretty good.
Yes. By the way, I think it's actually owned by an American, but originally operated in Asia. Anyway, it came to the U District in Seattle a couple of years ago, and there were enormous lines at the start.
People kind of hate it now.
Yeah, there's like it's just another place in the U District.
It's kind of a wasteland, as far as I can tell.
I don't know if I would go so far as to say wasteland, but it's not like notably busy. We went there before the UW women's basketball game a couple weeks ago on a Saturday afternoon. And yeah, I mean, there was like a very modest line maybe at best. So in comparing it to In-N-Out, I think number one, I find that In-N-Out quality is incredibly consistent. Like they are almost monastic in their dedication to making sure that you get the same burger every single time. Cali Burger is not as dedicated, and they've got, it's all college students from UW working.
And they hate their lives. I mean, like, I think the worst thing about Cali Burger, is how bad the service is, and how clearly the people who are working there do not want to be working there. Whereas if you go to an In-N-Out, those people are indoctrinated.
Yes, much like Dick's. That's I think, one thing they have in common. But it's also reflected in the quality of the burger. Like, I went twice in like a span of a month maybe recently. This was my second visit. And the quality was totally different on the two burgers.
Really?
As far as I could tell. The other thing is they have not quite replicated the secret sauce, particularly on the fries. It's like straight Thousand Island at Cali Burger. Whereas it's at least like a little bit subtle at In-N-Out.
It's close. It's not quite there. But the other thing that you have to live with when going to Cali Burger is the guilt.
Wait, what guilt?
The guilt about going to Cali Burger, which is clearly a knockoff of a much better restaurant.
No.
You don't feel guilty about this?
Screw In-N-Out. They won't put a location here. That's their loss.
Wow.
Yeah. If they want, if they put an in location in Seattle, I will never go to Cali Burger again. But they have forsaken Seattle.
It really is kind of
crazy. And therefore,
crazy.
I forsake them in Seattle.
I mean, In-N-Out really could just instantly make Cali Burger close.
It's ridiculous. We're way closer to California than most of the locations of In-N-Out that are not in California.
I don't know if that's true.
They have places in Dallas.
Dallas
is half the country away from California. We are way closer. We're on the same time zone. There is no compelling reason for us not to have In-N-Out.
I didn't know that there were locations in Dallas.
Yeah. I considered going there when I had the layover at the Dallas airport, but it would have been too tight. I couldn't have made it work. I definitely looked into it, though. So, no, there's zero guilt whatsoever. The other downside...
You don't have a little bit of guilt?
No, zero. The opposite. I feel like by idiot Cali Burger, I make a more compelling case to In-N-Out that they should come to Seattle.
I don't think you do.
Yeah, because they're aware that they're giving away profits.
I mean, so
the downside is that it's way more expensive than In-N-Out.
Is it?
Oh, yeah. It's substantially more expensive.
Really?
Yeah.
To me, the main things are going in there, you feel kind of bad about yourself. Like, you walk in, you're like...
I mean, I feel bad about myself anytime I eat In-N-Out in Cali Burger because of the health considerations.
Oh, I never consider the health considerations. But
really?
But you feel bad about yourself because... like, you just don't feel good. It's just not a, it's not cool vibes. You don't like the vibes
it's
of being in there.
It's a free market.
It's not about being a free market. It's that every single person there hates itself. It's like okay, when, if fair. You have children and you go to, which every single person on Seattle, on Seahawks Twitter does, they've been in this situation, and you go to some weird fair and they have a bunch of tiny horses on some sort of weird contraption and the horses hate their lives and your children like riding them, but you just die on the inside when it's happening.
Okay.
You'd rather your children be riding on stallions. You know, that want to have people riding on them. But as it is, they have these old horses that are hating every single second of it. That's what's going on at Caliburger.
This was an incredibly long analogy.
Dude, it's convoluted too. But that's the thing. If people liked working there, it would feel different.
I suppose.
It would. And that's why Dick's works. I mean, Dick's works because the burgers are great, but every time you go to Dick's, you feel good about yourself.
I don't know if I go that far. This all being said, what was your rating?
You know what? It's actually come down during our conversation.
Has it?
Yeah, it was an 84 before, and it's down to a 79.
Wow.
Yeah.
Your ratings are notably lower than mine in both cases here. I gave Kelly Burger an 88.
88?
Yeah. I think it's a solid B plus. It's not quite an A, but it's a solid B plus.
I just can't give Caliburger that good of a grade.
Yeah. All right.
Fair enough. I mean, look, I like In-N-Out. I love In-N-Out, and I like something that's trying to recreate what In-N-Out does. But
I got to tell you, the vibe is not getting me as down as you are. I was just enjoying the fact that I could watch the end of the what game was that? It was
you're just like Baby Fantasy Genius. What was it?
It was Texas. It was TCU because I was
oh,
trying.
Oh yeah, he would have loved that.
TCU versus West Virginia. It was a pretty good game.
Oh yeah, that's right up his alley.
That's like a major game that it will determine that probably will knock TCU off the bubble. The fact that they lost that game, a team that we played twice earlier in the season.
Speaking of the bubble,
well, I don't think we have to have too much concern. I suppose we're moving on. But first, did you want to say where we're eating next week? Did you come to a conclusion?
I came to a couple of conclusions.
Okay.
And you can make the final choice. But I was thinking we'd either do You Need a Burger or Zippy's.
I think let's go Zippy's.
Okay.
Let's stay local.
Okay.
Close to home.
These are all local.
like in the South End.
Okay.
Yeah, speaking of the bubble.
Okay, so we're going to be eating at Zippy's next week. If you'd like to go there, there's a location in West Seattle and a location in Georgetown. If you'd like to go there and eat along, guess what our grades will be?
Yeah, and how the 10 points lower than mine, yours will inevitably be. So, not speaking of the bubble, really, but the UW women's basketball team now finds itself awaiting the selection Sunday after their season, their Pac-12 tournament came to a premature end in the quarterfinals, getting upset by number 6 seed Oregon 70-69 in a really disappointing result, I think, for a team that hoped, you know, to get all the way to the final and maybe win this.
Tough loss at the home court.
Not at the home court, technically.
It's home court.
It was in Seattle at Key Arena, but not
at their
usual
home court.
It certainly seemed like they had tons of support, the highest attendance for a Pac-12 women's tournament in many years around that, but not enough.
Yeah, I mean, I watched the second half of this game, and the thing that stood out to me was, I mean, first off, Kelsey Plum was just off. It was probably the most off that I've seen Kelsey Plum, and if shots aren't going in for her, it's rough for the Huskies. And then also, Oregon just hit everything.
Yes, it was a classic game of...
It was like I was watching the Husky men. It was like Kay Felder was out there.
The expression that we use in the NBA is make or miss league.
I think people use that at all levels.
But it's not as true in college basketball.
There's a little professional thing here. It's a make or miss league.
It's not as true in college basketball because of the fact that usually the differences in quality between the teams are better. But this was a classic make or miss league game. Oregon goes 11 of 23 from three-point range. The Huskies, who are one of the nation's better three-point shooting teams, go 5 of 24, including 2 of 9 for Plum and 2 of 8 for Natalie Romeo. I mean, Plum, she wasn't that far off. She did score 34 points, but it took her 33 shots to get there, and I think Oregon had to feel satisfied with the game plan.
It was not a highly efficient game like Kelsey Plum usually has.
Yeah, and then Chantel Osohor was not much of a scoring factor, even though she had 27 rebounds in this game, which is incredible. She had 27 rebounds. Oregon had 38. As a team.
Where do the Huskies stand now going into Selection Sunday?
So the good news is it does not seem to have hurt them very much.
Really?
That they are still 12th in the AP poll that came out on Monday. The coaches poll hasn't yet been released. I think they were waiting for the Big 12 tournament final on Monday night. And the latest bracketology on ESPN with Charlie Cream still has the Huskies as the number 3 seed. I was a little concerned they might lose their chance to host the first two rounds.
Basically, you just want to be 1-4.
Yeah, that's the single biggest factor. And being 3 is nice because of the fact that it means you avoid, you know, potentially avoid the number 1 seed in your region until the regional final. One of the differences in women's college basketball as opposed to on the men's side is that you see a substantially bigger difference between the 1 seeds and the 2 seeds in the women's game, particularly if you like end up in UConn's region.
Who are the 1 seeds right now?
Like the nightmare scenario. Connecticut, Baylor, Notre Dame, and South Carolina are the 4 that Charlie Cream has. Oregon State had a chance to get in there had they won the Pac-12 tournament, but instead they lost it to Stanford in the final. So now, you know, like I said, because of the fact that they play this tournament a week early, the Huskies get to practice and wait for finding out where they're going to be selected in the selection show, which I think they might have moved from Monday to Sunday, but now I can't determine whether that actually happened or not.
I was going to say, this could be the first time that I ever watched the women's selection show. It's after the men's selection show on Sunday now?
I'm not shocked.
Wow.
And I cannot readily find this information online, so I don't know what to tell you right now. Guess check your local listings.
Your local listings.
That's what big people do, right?
Husky men's is last week. Did you pay any attention?
No.
Neither did I. I went out of my way not to watch these games.
I thought it was interesting. My sense was that until it was announced that Markelle Fultz was officially out for the UCLA game, that the people of Boston were way more invested in the UCLA-UW game than anyone in Seattle was.
Yeah, nobody is invested.
Zero investment. So the Huskies lost by 32 at UCLA on Wednesday, lost by 16 on Saturday at USC without Markelle Fultz, and extended their Pac-12 losing streak to 12 games.
That seems about right.
And meant that they enter the Pac-12 tournament this week is the 11th seed and will rematch against USC on Wednesday night in the final game from Las Vegas.
Okay, one quick question about this. What do you put the percentage chances at of the Huskies winning the Pac-12 tournament? Is it less than 1?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, substantially less than 1. Like, if Markelle Fultz plays, there's a measurable chance. If he doesn't play, there is no measurable chance the Huskies win.
Okay.
And Lorenzo Romar said Monday that they were waiting for him to undergo further testing and had nothing to announce about his status. But I heard some speculation from some people in Boston at the Sloan Conference that they thought he would play in the Pac-12 tournament, but we'll see if that actually comes to pass.
So I was going to say to you that maybe the importance of this game against USC is it could quite possibly be Lorenzo Romar's last game as the Husky head coach.
It could be, although it seems like a long shot. So there was a report Monday night from Yahoo's Pat Ford that the Huskies had in fact decided to retain Romar based on the size of his buyout, the incoming recruiting class, all the same things we've talked about. And that was quickly denied by the UW Athletic Department, the men's basketball SID, issuing a statement that said, it's absolutely untrue that any decision has been reached, which is kind of a strange situation to be in.
Who do you think Pat Forty's contacts are?
I don't know.
And why would UW basketball, why would the athletic department so quickly deny this?
I mean, possibly because it's true. It's untrue that what they're saying is true, that they have, in fact, reached no decision. And, you know, that would be reasonable to the extent that, you know, you might want to wait to review the program until after the season is concluded. Not that anything is really particularly going to change this week in Vegas, but I don't know. I guess, you know, basically.
Is it just that they want to get out ahead of the story? They want to be breaking the story rather than Yahoo?
I don't know. The one related piece of news was that Missouri officially fired their head coach, Kim Anderson, opening that job in case Romar were to get fired is a possibility, or possibly even for him to jump, I guess. You know, the one scenario would be if the buyout is a big factor. If Missouri was willing to pay that, would that change things? I don't know. I mean, we've talked about this.
I read that Konzo Martin was the
favorite there?
Yeah, the favorite for the Missouri job.
I don't know. We've talked about this kind of ad nauseum. At this point, I think the thing I can say is this season has destroyed my confidence that the Huskies will be a competitive team next year, even with Michael Porter.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Well, like, how much better is Michael Porter going to be than Markel Fultz?
It's not about... Like, why am I arguing this to you now? It's not about Michael Porter being that much better than Markel Fultz, although I do think he's better. Or I do think he'll be a better college basketball player.
I mean, yes, the team will probably be deeper because you're bringing in a lot of talent on the wing in addition to Porter.
It's not about that. Who's it's about the experience of Matisse Thybulle.
What? How is that going to take your defense from, what, in the low 250s in the country to something where you can actually be competitive? Like, I don't know.
Wow.
That's not to say that I
You're kind of like leaning towards the fire Romar camp.
I don't want him to be fired because...
I just want to watch Michael Porter next year.
Yes. And I think Romar's...
Although watching Markel Fultz this year has not actually been that great.
No. The fact that Romar... They're, by the way, 231st in adjusted good defense. The fact that Romar is the most successful coach in Washington history, unequivocally, means that he has...
Marv Harshman, not...
No. Like, Marv Harshman's career does not even...
Yeah,
like,
Marv with Harshman all due respect sucks. To Marv Harshman, he's like Bill Barnwell.
With all due respect to Marv Harshman, his career does not stack up to what Romar has done
at
UW. So he's earned a chance to have a better conclusion, a better fate at UW than getting unceremoniously fired after a 9-22 season.
Okay, I mean, he had the 9-22 season. Like, it would be his doing that he was unceremoniously fired. But at the same time, when you told me about this Pat 40 report, I was excited about it.
I'm pretty sure he pronounces it Ford.
I think you're wrong about that.
I don't know.
But like, you're as wrong about this as you are about what qualifies as a fast food restaurant. But I don't remember what I was talking about. I was rambling about something Lorenzo Roma related.
But it's possible by the time we record this podcast next week.
Oh, I was excited about the report. Because I think he deserves one more year. This is it, though. It's like, he's on the hot seat. You either make the NCAA tournament or you're gone.
Yes, I think that's pretty much the understood thing. I actually talked to someone, a Husky fan in Boston, who thought that the standards were even higher than that. Like, they had to make a deep tournament run or he was gone.
Well, I mean, I suppose,
Yeah, there's a lot of nuance to it.
If they're an 11 seed and just barely make it in, it may be different. But
if you're making a decision based on the outcome of one game, you're probably not making a very good decision. That's one of my rules in life.
But your seeding matters.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, that's not based on one game necessarily.
Yeah. To me, that would be an issue if they're like an 11 seed and they happen to win a game. Oh, and then we'll keep Lorenzo Romar. But I do think that it's set up now. It still seems likely to me that he's coming back.
It does to me, too.
Maybe we can talk about this further next week. Maybe we'll have an official statement next week.
Yeah, by that point, we now know.
But it does feel like Lorenzo's coming back for one more year, which we kind of expected to happen and kind of thought should happen. He has this team. He has a more experienced team, right? You can't just blame experience.
No.
As far as we know. Like, we don't know who's going to leave. But assuming that Matisse comes back, David Crisp comes back, Noah Dickerson comes back, Dominic Green comes back, if he has to. if he's not kicked off the team. And you have a very good recruiting class coming in and a superstar player in Michael Porter, right? With all of those things, if Lorenzo Romar cannot win, that's it. He's not going to win in any scenario.
Yeah, there is no excuse at that point.
So
speaking of Porter, he led Nathan Hale to a third win over fourth win over Garfield this season. I guess the fourth.
You just keep playing Garfield.
Well, it's the closest thing they can get to competition in the state of Washington, and even that is not sufficient. As Nathan Hale finished their season undefeated, will almost certainly be the crown of the high school mythical
My
national
God,
champion.
Number one, he is so good. Michael, I'm telling you, Michael Porter, we are going to look back on this and say that he's a better player than Markelle Fultz, and we had Markelle Fultz the year before.
I mean, I'm hesitant to go too far with that, but he is certainly a better prospect at this point than Markelle Fultz was considered.
My God! So, I mean, that's why you do whatever you can, shining into the glass.
A toast to Brandon Roy for winning...
future Husky head coach Brandon Roy.
Aspirationally. For bringing home, it looks like, a national championship in his first year on the sidelines.
My God.
And it was all Roy's coaching.
Yep.
I've always said that.
He made Michael Porter everything that he is.
Everything he knows, he learned from Roy. One other quick note. Since I don't know when we'll be recording next week in advance of the NCAA tournament, we are planning an NCAA tournament Pelton Cast pool.
Wow.
I guess we have to do this. We should do this for both the men's and women's tournaments, right?
I've never done a women's.
There's always a first time.
Bracket.
You just pretty much pick all the favorites.
Okay.
That's not even a joke. That's just the truth. But we should do both of those, and we will be posting more information about that next week on the Pelton Cast Twitter and on the Pelton Cast page. So be sure to check that out and make sure you enter.
This is your chance to beat NBA insider Kevin Pelton at predicting the NCAA tournament, and me.
Which last year our mom did in our family tournament.
Routinely does.
No, usually only when Duke wins the national championship.
this is your chance to compete against NBA insider Kevin Pelton and our mother, Jan Duke.
Yep.
What about the Sounders kicking off their season?
Yes, in losing fashion, losing 2-1 at Houston on Saturday. You watched this game. What did you think?
It was a rough match. It really was. It was rough because the Sounders just looked so off in the first half.
Yeah, everything. All the descriptions are, quote, sluggish.
Sloppy. I mean, look, it's one match in Houston. This is an endless MLS season, right?
Yes.
None of this matters.
Got 9 months left.
We'll never think of this again. But it was a match where the Sounders looked old. They looked disinterested at times, and they finally put it together and were like, that's what the team could be, but it wasn't enough.
But it was a better effort in the second half. It sounds like Jovan Jones got really involved, got involved in the attack coming up the left flank from his left back spot.
I thought the second half was pretty strong, but at the same time, it still, I felt like maybe the Sounders announcing crew was trying to create a story of how much better they were playing, more so than it was happening on the field necessarily. Were there that many chances to actually score? I don't know.
I mean, the shots on goal were pretty similar between the two teams. Sounders had the dramatic advantage in terms of possession in this game.
Yeah, that was interesting that they had so much possession, but still didn't necessarily lead to actual scoring opportunities. I felt like Ramon Torres, despite being the hero of the MLS Cup, had a very bad match.
Interesting.
I mean, it was in the first half especially. Torres got it together a little bit in the second half, but both of the goals were almost directly Ramon Torres' fault.
So I think the most interesting part of the lineup that we saw on Sunday was that Gustav Svensson got the start at right back, as he did in the Sounders' last preseason match. I didn't read too much into it at that point, but it looks like that's a pretty permanent thing, with Brad Evans, therefore, being on the bench, did not even get into the match.
And was moving to midfield more often also. It was interesting to see him. But at the same time, it was basically the exact Sounders lineup from last year, right? This is what I was saying to you. The lineup did not look very different.
Yeah, I guess that's true. We did see differences on the bench where both the players who came in were newcomers.
Okay, so who's the second sub from UW?
Was it from UW?
Yeah. Because I really like that guy. I can't remember his name.
I can't remember it off the top of my head either, but one of the local signings.
I thought he was making some things happen.
Yeah, okay.
It was interesting. And another thing, so Torres didn't have a great match. Also, Jordan Morris. I was expecting this to be kind of Jordan Morris's breakout year, right? Which, granted, it's one match out of an endless season. And he had one play in the first half where he outran two Houston defenders, made a great play. But
Henry Wingo, by the way.
Henry Wingo. I like Henry Wingo. He's got a little bit of a Lamar Nagel vibe.
Oh, I like that. I'm in on that.
But Jordan Morris just not that noticeable for most of the match. There was not that he didn't put his footprint on the game. Clint Dempsey definitely did, but there was it still seemed like they were trying to figure out how to use Ladero, Morris, and Dempsey all together. Also, Will Bruin, very good looking man.
Is he? Okay, good to know.
Yeah.
So it was a Will Bruin revenge game against Houston last week.
I mean, he didn't play very much. He played about 10 minutes in this one. Didn't really have any chances to make too much happen. But I'm curious to see Will Bruin going forward.
And not just going forward on the pitch. This week, a revenge game for Harry Shipp as the Sounders travel to Montreal to take on the Impact in a game that will be played apparently at the Olympic Stadium due to weather conditions preventing them from playing this game outdoors.
Okay.
So when last we saw the Impact in Montreal, they were hosting Toronto FC at Olympic Stadium in front of a sellout crowd in the Eastern Conference Finals. Looked for a long period of time like they were going to advance, which we were desperately rooting for because it meant the Sounders would have hosted the MLS Cup final. They eventually fell to Toronto FC in extra time. Started their season this year with a loss last week at San Jose, 1-0.
And it'll be interesting to see. The takeaway that we had from Montreal last season was that they're able to score, but also they're going to give up opportunities.
Which... it seems like, you know, they only gave up conceded one goal in the opener, but it seems like it's probably going to be the case again this season. The 538 power rankings, soccer power index, pretty low on Montreal in general, and particularly on their defense, which they rate 17th in the league. They rate the Sounders number one in the league, despite the two goals they conceded last week.
This feels like a good opportunity for the Sounders to pick up their first win of the season.
I don't know if I'd go that far necessarily, especially being on the road for a second consecutive game. But, you know, I think you've got a chance to get hold if you can contain their attacking trio. They don't have Didier Drogba, who seemed unhappy basically his entire time in MLS.
Is he gone? Where is he? He's playing in China?
I did not look up where he is, but he's gone. But they still have the trio of Ignacio Piatti, Matteo Mancuso, and Dominic Oduro. Not the same Dominic Oduro who plays for the Sounders. There are two Dominic Oduros in MLS, weirdly enough. But that trio combined for 7 goals and 5 assists in last year's playoff run. So clearly quite potent.
Okay. It's going to be a looser game than they played this last week.
I think that's accurate.
There are going to be goals scored.
Yeah.
And it would be nice to see. I mean, the Sounders obviously had the potential to put together a very potent offense between Ladero, Morris, Dempsey, having Clint Dempsey back. And I think this might be the week that we really see what that actually looks like.
Yeah, I mean, first, it was just good for Dempsey to be on the pitch last week,
I think. It's pretty amazing that he played the full 90.
Yeah. All right, should we talk about the combine?
Should we?
That was pretty exciting from a UW standpoint.
This was like Saturday morning was pretty amazing. I guess it was maybe midday for you in Boston.
Well, I ran into like a handful of people from Seattle at the Sloan Conference, and every single one at some point went, "How about John Ross's 40?
John Ross, right?
All time. I'm now out of beer, but a toast to the all time 40 champion in combine history with a 4.22.
I watched a video of John Ross running the 40 with Chris Johnson, the previous fastest 40 time, like superimposed on top of him. And Chris Johnson's running, right? Chris Johnson is trying very hard. John Ross looks casual compared to him.
Well, especially because apparently he cramped up during the course of his 40 and later did not participate in other drills because of it.
I think he could have run it 2/10 of a second better.
2/10? You think you could have read a four, like four, 200s or 2/10?
200s? I don't know.
Because 4.02 would be like superhuman.
I think you could have ran possible. a 4.20.
Okay. That is a very specific thing to say.
But it didn't look like he was running quite his fastest.
So we don't have a full spark score for John Ross because he didn't participate in all the testing. But Zach Whitman of Seahawks Twitter, friend of the pod.
Good friend of the pod.
Okay. Guesstimated based
on... I have no evidence that he's ever listened to this podcast.
But he's tweeted at us from time to time.
In relation to somebody else. At Peltoncast happened to get involved in one of the tweets.
Anyway, Zach projected based on his past athletic testing that he would rank in the 97th or 98th percentile of all wide receivers in spark score, which is a pretty good, you know, summation of all these drills that are done at the combine, which would be second best among this year's wide receivers. So he's pretty solid. He's pretty much solidified himself as a first round pick.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. That was the thing, that the big takeaway from this was John Ross, probably the fastest wide receiver ever. In fact, definitively the fastest wide receiver ever. But also that the possibilities with what you can do with him, right, is that NFL teams are going to look at this and say, we need John Ross on our team.
Yeah, I mean, the way he can help as a returner in addition to his ability as a wide receiver.
What about the rest of the Huskies?
Well, in some ways, I would say that despite setting the all-time record, John Ross didn't have the best combine of any Huskies.
This is going to be my hot take, but it's a...
It's a lukewarm take at best, because Kevin King managed to record the best spark score of any quarterback at the combine.
I'm so excited about this.
99th percentile of NFL players that Zach Whitman has captured at his website. He had the best three-cone drill of any player, the second-best 20-yard shuttle of any player, and he did it all at 6'3".
And he's tall!
Yeah.
Kevin King went from, man, I hope the Seahawks draft him in the second round, to, I hope he gets to the Seahawks in the first round.
It's crazy. He's not even the best UW quarter in the draft.
I would say there's a good chance, as of right this second, that Kevin King is the first UW player drafted in this draft.
Wow. Does the fact that the Huskies tested so well at the combine make you feel a little bit less about the coaching up that Coach Pete did? Like, obviously, he had some pretty good raw material to work with. in the coaching staff.
No.
Okay.
Because, look, you can be fast and you can do all these things, but to actually play defense is a very different experience.
That's true. And speaking of which, Sidney Jones did not rate all that well at the combine.
He rated fine.
He's in the 30th percentile among cornerbacks.
And on the field, Sidney Jones was probably the better cornerback
exactly.
for the last two seasons.
Well, no, not probably. He clearly was the better cornerback.
Man, and that play, I just will never forget that play that Kevin King made where he follows the receiver all the way down the field. The perfect batting it away at the last second. It's like, that is the Kevin King play.
So Jones, despite the fact that it was not nearly as impressive a performance as King, still considered a positive, I think, compared to what people expect. And he's solidly still in the, you know, first, second round mix. Probably in the first.
What about the rest of the Huskies? Starting in the secondary.
Yeah, staying in the secondary with Buda Baker. He finished fifth among safeties in spark score, which is actually a little below average among NFL players, but he led all safeties in the 20-yard shuttle. Again, I think, you know, pretty much status quo for Buda Baker, who's late first, early second, somewhere in that mix.
Good showing, and it seems like every single person loves Buda Baker.
And why wouldn't they? Talked about training with Earl Thomas.
Yeah, I mean,
obviously.
There are all these players from, like, can we just have them all?
Yes. I agree with that. Elijah Qualls finished fifth among defensive linemen in spark score. You know, again, pretty much what you'd expect from him, I would say.
It seemed like there was a pretty big drop off between the top couple of folks and then Elijah Qualls down at number five.
Yeah. Darrell Daniels had the fourth fastest 40 time among tight ends, an incredibly athletic group this year at tight end, and finished middle of the pack, seventh in spark score. And then Joe Mathis didn't do the drills because of his injury other than doing the bench press.
I feel like Darrell Daniels kind of surprised me a little bit, though. Faster than I would have expected.
You think so? I mean, he's a converted wide receiver. That's always kind of been the strength of his game. The question mark has always been his blocky ability.
He feels like somebody who might fare a little bit better in the NFL than he did in college.
Yeah.
But I'm so excited. This is the first time that I've been excited for the draft in maybe 4 or 5 years. I don't think I've cared about the draft since the Seahawks had two, like, top 15 picks.
It's interesting because there was a period of time where you were way more invested in the draft than I was. I was very out on the NFL draft. And the last few years, for whatever reason, I've been more in on the NFL draft. I've been more in on it partially because they moved it off the same weekend as the first weekend of the NBA playoffs, which makes it a little easier for me to pay attention.
Okay. I'm excited about the draft this year, though, to see where all these Huskies go.
Yeah.
Like, this is very different than we've seen before. It might have been that there was one player or two players, but now there are quite a few Huskies that are going to go on the first day and in the second day.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing.
And then obviously the Seahawks making news during the combine. First off, the news since then, the report on Monday that the Seahawks will offer the lowest restricted free agent tender to Gary Gilliam, which means that other teams will be able to bid for him. And if the Seahawks don't match, they get him without giving up any draft compensation. I don't think surprising in the context of his season.
No.
So the Seahawks did, John Schneider did say during the combine that he expected Gary Gilliam to be back next year. I guess actually both him and Pete Carroll said that, but it will kind of depend on what the market ends up being. It sounds like a situation where he'll probably be back, but in competition with someone else at that position.
Sure.
You don't think so?
No, he definitely will be. I don't know if he'll definitely be back.
On the other side, Pete Carroll, effusive in his praise of George Fant, as we alluded to earlier.
Okay, so there were kind of mixed messages, I felt.
I guess not in his praise necessarily, but at least in his confidence. Excitement.
His excitement. It felt like, I think it was Thursday maybe, John Schneider meets with the media, does his press conference, right? And is saying, the Seahawks got a little bit too young on the offensive line, which I do agree with.
I have a thought on this. I think people misinterpreted what he was saying, especially in regards to waiving Jari Evans. Because yes. Jari Evans wasn't going to play if they had kept him. I mean, I guess other than the first couple weeks of the season. He's behind Jermaine Ifedi. He can only play right guard. What John Schneider was talking about was he felt they got too young in terms of veteran leadership. He wants more of a veteran presence. He doesn't necessarily mean the players, he wants to bring in a new starter necessarily, or like multiple new starters.
So you think he wants depth on the offensive line, veteran depth on the offensive line?
Yes.
But not necessarily veteran starters on the offensive line?
Yes. Which maybe at right tackle, we'll see.
It felt like saying that the Seahawks should maintain with their offensive line was one of the hottest takes that the Pelton cast has had.
For sure. Yeah.
And it wasn't even necessarily that they should. It's just that I personally think that they will. Right?
And in my position was not necessarily that they should go forward with the status quo, but just that you need to figure out who that five is and stick with it. It can't be shuffling throughout the season.
Right tackle feels like the one slot where maybe they haven't.
I would agree with that.
But the rest of the line, it feels like, especially hearing Pete's comments the next day and knowing that they feel confident that George Fant is the left tackle going into the season.
Yeah, because their point, Pete Carroll's point is, given where he started this time a year ago, where he never played it down, never played a snap on the offensive line when the Seahawks picked him up after the draft, to starting in the playoffs at the end of the season, that is a pretty enormous leap, even though he wasn't a good starter.
Yeah, just because you play him doesn't mean that he's playing well.
So that's their confidence that he's going to take a bigger leap than even the typical, you know, rookie tackle would make.
But and I think the people who are hoping for, you see like Andrew Whitworth is out there, right? I think the people who are hoping for a free agent like that kind of off base for what's going to happen here.
I agree.
And like we've talked about this a lot. At best, it'll be a veteran free agent who they might keep around for longer than they've kept around Jari Evans and who is the tackle from the previous year?
The tackle from the
previous really tall tackle from the previous year?
Jamarcus Webb?
Yeah, Jamarcus Webb.
I mean, that was also last season.
Oh, they were both last season?
But Webb did not make it through the entire year. There was also Bradley Sowell who did make it through the entire year but didn't start by the end of it. So, I mean, I think that's kind of the model there. Maybe a little bit higher caliber free agent than that. The other message from Schneider about the offensive line said that Tom Cable was one of the best offensive line coaches in the league. So anyone who is unhappy about that, sorry, not changing.
I mean, it's such an impossible thing to judge, right?
Yes.
Like, he's working with a person who's never played left tackle before in his entire life. Like, getting him to the point that Pete Carroll is excited about this person might be an amazing feat for Tom Cable.
Right.
He basically has not had any time that Tom Cable has had a lineman who's been up as a free agent has not been re-signed.
Yep.
Whereas you look at every single other position on the Seahawks, those players are coming back.
Yep. Other than kicker. It's the other storyline of the week at the Combine. On the first day, Schneider, you know, kind of very much left the door open to Stephen Hauschka's return, says that signing Blair Walsh was mostly about competition and just their excitement about being able to bring him in. Nothing to do with Hauschka. Slightly different message from Pete Carroll the next day, saying he's a free agent. He can go where he wants.
Well, Pete Carroll also didn't just say that, right? He said, we are a kick away here and there from playing at home in the playoffs.
See, I think that's been kind of taken out of context. Because you have to understand that he didn't say that in response to a question about Blair Walsh.
What does that mean?
He said that in response to a question about, are you confident about the Seahawks going forward? And like, you know, where your position. So his point
it's
was...
It's not a coincidence that he mentioned a kick.
It's not.
He didn't say a touchdown here and there.
It's true.
He didn't say a block
here. But
it's
not like he... I don't think he was specifically blaming Stephen Hauschka for the fact that the Seahawks didn't host a playoff game, which I think is the way a lot of people interpreted that, is him throwing it under the...
I was going to say, because he missed the extra point, but also the defense gave up a field goal. Right? When we're talking week 16 against the Cardinals, Stephen Hauschka didn't hit the extra point that would have put the Seahawks up, but the defense let Arizona come down the field and hit a field goal.
I would like to remind everyone of what throwing your kicker under the bus sounds like. And it's Jim Mora talking about Aluno Mari after a loss to the Dolphins.
You'll go out of your way to blame Jim Mora.
We're not going to fight our asses off and have a field goal kicker go out there and miss two field goals and lose a game. That's a pretty different message from what Pete Carroll had to say after the season ended. And I think you also can read the comment about he's a free agent, he can go where he wants. You can read that a few ways. You can read that as, do what he wants, I don't care. Or you can read it as, like, he's a free agent. We don't control what he's going to do. He has every right to go sign for another with another team, which is why you would want to bring in a potential replacement. Now, I still think Blair Walsh is not that guy for the reasons we went into a few weeks ago on the podcast. I think that guy will either be drafted or signed as an undrafted free agent. But, you know, I don't think that Pete Carroll is, like, you know, really dismissive of Stephen Hauschka.
Okay.
I don't agree with that narrative. The other comment from John Schneider was that the obvious fact that Deshaun Shedd's injury, the likelihood he will, the almost certainty he will not be back at the start of the next season, pushes cornerback up there.
It means they're drafting Kevin King.
It does.
If Kevin King is out there, would you be surprised if the Seahawks didn't draft him?
Yes. If the Seahawks, would I be surprised if the Seahawks didn't draft him? No, I'm sorry. I guess it was our choice. Because any individual player, I would never be surprised if the Seahawks didn't draft him. Like that,
this might go into my theory where it's like any player, if they fall far enough, like if Myles Garrett's out there, would you be surprised?
No, but even if Kevin King is out there, they might not have him as the best player. They might prefer to address cornerback later in the draft. They haven't drafted a cornerback in the early rounds at any point in the Schneider-Carroll tenure.
Okay.
So, no, it wouldn't surprise me if they passed on him.
Is there anything that you're looking at going into free agency or wait and see?
I remember the time a few years ago when we said, probably a quiet offseason for the Seahawks. And then, like, days later, they traded for Jimmy Graham. So, like, I've learned not to predict what they're going to do. Who knows? We'll watch and see.
I would say Pete and John definitely like to make splashes.
They're either going to do nothing or make an enormous splash.
Yes.
Those are the only two options, which I guess might mean that they then surprise us by doing something in between. All right. You have anything else on the Seahawks or the Combine?
I think I'm good.
I wanted to close with a special message this week on a little bit more of a somber note. Got the news last weekend that my former coworker at the Sonics, Pete Weinmiller, had passed away due to lymphoma. And, not everyone got the chance to work with Pete like I did and know what an incredible coworker he was, someone who always had a smile on his face and was an uplifting teammate, you know, throughout my time with the Sonics. But even if you didn't have that experience, you still felt Pete Weinmiller's influence if you went to any Sonics game in the last decade or so that they were here. He was in charge of the fan experience for the Sonics and then later for the Oklahoma City Thunder. And it was a point of pride to the level of an obsession. And, you know, every interaction that you had with an usher, with a member of the Sonics staff, was really directed by Pete and his philosophy of making sure that the customer, you know, the fan in the arena would always have the best experience possible. So, you know, I think know, you, even if you didn't know him, you you benefited from what Pete did, and really sad to lose him to lymphoma, and thinking of him and his family in this time. So on that note,
thanks for listening.
Thanks.